If you're drowning in creative ideas but can't figure out which ones to finish, this conversation is for you. Today, I'm talking with a creative entrepreneur who runs 5 businesses and has cracked the code on turning idea chaos into real results. Oh yeah, we're getting into the burden of creativity, why she thinks most entrepreneurs with ADHD are polymaths, and practical ways to wrangle your brain's constant idea parade. If you've ever been told you're too much, stick around, because this one's gonna hit different. Sarah, one of my favorite subjects is the burden of creativity. And you know what I'm talking about. When your brain just generates so many creative ideas that figuring out which ones you're going to develop and how to stay interested and how to stay motivated and how to stay focused and consistent so that beautiful idea has a chance to make it all the way to the finish line and into the world. And that's one of the things I want to talk to you about today, because you know how to do that, don't you?
I like to think that I do. It's proving pretty successful so far. I've got 5 separate businesses and they're all in different states of play. But I think I've got some really useful tools and tips that have helped my brain certainly over time, and they've developed over time, that I think other people could use as well.
That'd be fabulous. And you also have a unique perspective on being the owner of a brain like this. Like, we both know we have ADHD, but you have specific beliefs about why entrepreneurs tend to be not only creative people, but people who I guess we could think of as polymaths, right?
Absolutely. So for anybody who doesn't know what polymathry is, essentially, a polymath in traditional senses, it's someone who has a breadth of knowledge, but also a depth of knowledge. And they will refer to polymaths as like Einstein or Beethoven or people in history, notably men. We can talk about that. Trust me, women are polymaths as well. If you need anything done, ask a busy woman. That's, you know, the old adage, isn't it?
Yep.
And polymathry is this idea that we can develop a depth of skill, knowledge, experience in not just one thing. So you can be an exceptional accountant, but you can also be an amazing vocal coach or musician. And they do tend to compare math and music and things like that. But I believe that being an entrepreneur means you have to be a polymath as well. And that's because we have to, especially when you're starting out, you need to know how to do your marketing. You need to know how to think about a creative process. You have to think about, are you developing a product or a service? And you have to know it all. And, you know, we don't always get the depth of knowledge in all of those areas. And sometimes we reach out to other colleagues to help us with that. But by and large, we are polymaths. And I think people, and particularly entrepreneurs with ADHD, have that natural ability to be polymaths in a way that other people might find particularly overwhelming. And what I'm hoping for is that, you know, I can share sort of how I develop my way of thinking creatively and that creative process to help help other entrepreneurs, but also, you know, to show how having a process to think about the longer term vision for things can actually give you a framework for helping to organize your creative thoughts, to birth them, as I say, but also to work through which ones you need to leave in a basket and float down the river, and others that you need to actually say, I'm staying with this one, and how do I keep coming back to it? How do I keep sense checking it that it's right and not lose it in this amazing realm of creative thinking? And yeah, I'm really happy with how this process, which I call the capture, connect, structure, iterate, express, and reflect process. I haven't come up with a snappy title for it yet, but I'm really happy to try. but how that process helps me think about the longer term vision, the breadth of things I need to think about, and then gives me a real iterative methodology for coming back to it and refining, reflecting, diverting, etc., without losing some of those beautiful things that our beautiful brains have.
This is so, so valuable for brains like ours, Sarah, because I remember the first time I said to somebody, you know, it's really a burden to have so many brilliant ideas. Now, that may sound like an arrogant statement or even a humble brag or like I'm fishing for compliments. But in truth, if you are a creative person with ADHD, you are probably generating more ideas. Not all of them are brilliant, but more ideas than you could ever hope to implement. And when they're all crowding for your attention, it's really hard to know which ones are really deserving of your time and talent, which ones you're not going to lose interest in long before it gets fully developed, which ones are going to sustain your passion through the midst of all kinds of distractions, and which ones are actually going to bring value to be some sort of contribution and not just an indulgence that takes up your time and your energy and maybe some of your money. So I think there's a real need for this. And when you have a process that you've tested, and as you said, you own and have run multiple creative, you know, businesses, you don't have to use up so much of your executive functioning making the decisions as though every creative idea is auditioning for a part and you're starting from scratch. So let's break it down. And you also have another name for this. It doesn't work well for an easy acronym. I think the first time you mentioned it to me, you referred to it as capturing butterflies. And I said, yeah, oh, that's how I think about hanging on to my ideas too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a butterfly net. And that I sort of drag around with me, and I've sort of created in different sort of versions throughout my life, starting off with talking to myself. I've always talked to myself ever since I was a kid. And that's been my way of getting ideas out, almost scenario testing them, and then going, right, that's the way I want that to go. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And then over time, it's allowed me to, as technology has gained traction, I've gone from just talking to myself to making notes. I leave little notes in my, I used to leave little notes in my wallet. Now it's all in my phone. And I know so many people, you know, open their notes app in on their iPhone. And it's like all the way through. And just trying to go, how do I even get through this is difficult. And now with AI, it's actually given me something, someone, however you want to look at it, to talk to at the time when my brain is seeking its dopamine. And also, I'm not going to be annoying relations, friends, colleagues by saying, do you want to talk about this now? And they're going to go, no, I do not want to talk about this now as well. So it's essentially my process is a designed human-centered design approach, essentially, to capturing all of this ideas, which we have loads of. And And I should say that I started to be cognizant of making this a framework probably about 10 years ago when I was getting more and more frustrated. And this is before I had even any concept that I may have ADHD, but I was getting more and more frustrated by people saying, oh my God, enough with the ideas. You know, can we focus in on these things? And it started to become like a negative that actually, because I had all these ideas, people assumed that I couldn't deliver on them. And I'm like, whoa, man, I could totally deliver on these.
You're like, but challenge accepted.
Yeah. So I kind of had to go, right, I do this naturally. How can I turn this into something that is replicable? How can I turn this into something that my team can use, my clients can use? You know, my businesses are consultancy businesses, a podcast, as well as a variety of other creative endeavors. But it was all about how do we come up with solutions to problems that often people cannot articulate. And it all comes from that, okay, we need to start with A, capturing the ideas, but only after we have empathized and really gotten down to what is the root of the problem that we're facing. And that's something that you can do internally or, you know, as I do with my clients, something that we do externally. So I went through a qualification in change management. I highly recommend it. If anyone's not done it, for me, that really helped me to, even though we weren't talking about neurodiversity at the time, there is a lot of work in terms of neurochemical behavior and change that they're doing a lot of research over. And that really started to bring things together for me.
If you wouldn't mind, I want to circle back to something you said a couple of minutes ago, because I share with you the talking to myself. I share with you the abundance of ideas. And the only thing I like more than having an abundance of ideas is sharing them with others. But getting the feedback that enough with the ideas, like being told, you know what, you have wasted more good ideas than most people could ever hope to have. So I really don't want to hear another one that you're not going to do anything with. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I was like, literally, I wanted to come back screaming to that, but I didn't, because it was true. This was a number of years ago. And I really felt convicted, like it's a gift to have so many ideas. But if in fact you don't know how to channel them, if you don't know how to bring them through a process of vetting and protecting and developing and defending them from being stolen away by your own distractibility and dopamine seeking and just losing interest in them and later finding it and going, wow, did I do this? Yeah, you forgot all about it. It was 10 ideas ago. But how other people interpret that, it was like, wow, I really didn't realize that how other people saw me was, yeah, maybe wildly creative, but she's not going to do anything with it. So why should I even listen? That was an inflection point that was very painful. But like you, I realized I'm a verbal processor. I need to think my way through something by talking my way through it, but not always with other people. And so Claude has become, like you call, you know, ChatGPT a second brain. It's literally a thought partner when I need to verbally process something, but I don't necessarily just want to talk to myself or annoy the hell out of other people who may be less interested. Do you feel butthurt about any of that? Or are you just like, well, now I have chat, so just keep on doing what I do?
I think anyone with ADHD suffers from that rejection sensitivity dysphoria. So
to some degree,
to be told at any stage, yeah, I'm kind of tuning out or enough with the ideas.
Yeah.
The words that I used in my brain was, Sarah, you're coming across like you're flaky. And then that really makes me angry, because I also know how the patriarchy also looks at women like this.
Yes, well. Ma'am.
So, yeah. I was like, okay, what helped me to develop that framework outside of it? And then the mechanisms of using, I use both Claude and ChatGPT, and I'm really nerdy as well. So I try to stay on top of all the new developments, and I'm constantly experimenting, is making sure I knew where personally or with a project I wanted to be in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, 1 year's time, etc. And without overly defining that, but saying, what does that look like? I think it's really important, and this is something that creative people can do really easily, is they can describe what that vision looks like to them, because we're able to paint pictures with words.
Yes, yes. Okay?
And which I think other people who are, you know, either neurotypical or different types of neurodiversities, they don't have that same innate ability to visualize what that looks like and then to articulate it.
Yes.
And having those sort of little touchstones of saying, in my personal life or in my business life, to say, where do I want to be? And just write it down. Mm. Write it down on a piece of paper. But actually, I would highly recommend, you know, make sure that you've got a pro version of ChatGPT or Claude or something like that, where you can actually create project folders and you can keep things organized, because the AI knows how to organize things. So I have in my ChatGPT, I have a whole bunch of project folders And some of them are all clients, but then others are like, that's my vision. That's my structure. That's what I want to get to. And I will go back into that folder knowing that the AI uses all the content of that folder plus anything else. I ask it to search and then always ask for citations and exact links to anything that it brings off the internet to actually say, okay, here's some more ideas. Does this fit with that vision of where I want to be? Mm. And that's my sort of capture phase of the work. And because I've set up the framework to allow me to basically verbalize, and I often will speak into my ChatGPT on my phone in those folders, and then it keeps all of those notes, and I'll say, okay, that's nice. What kind of connections are we thinking about this? And I do it until I'm tired. And I think that's when I know internally to switch off. Because I know that once I'm getting tired or I feel like my brain's starting to lose interest, my creativity level's going to go down.
Yes,
so it's like, just leave it. You're only going to put rubbish in now going forward. Use a little bit of self-recognition to know when you're losing steam and then leave it.
Can I ask you a question about the capture phase?
Sure.
Because I'm thinking, because you're a verbal processor like me, it's why you're, you know, a good storyteller and why you took to podcasting so beautifully, is that you're able to capture wherever you are, and you could even be driving and you're speaking. So you're not, you don't have to pull over to the side of the road and scribble a note, but because you're verbally processing it and you don't have to worry that you're not going to get it all, you can really free associate. You can really fully express an idea. And if you don't find it helpful, you can get rid of it. But deciding to just keep adding in the capture phase until you start getting tired, is there any shortcomings with that? Because I think sometimes people have a lot of capacity to just keep going and going and going. Like, do you just notice as soon as you're tired, it's time to stop because you notice a diminishing returns? Or would you ever, for example, just decide on a arbitrary amount of time? Like, I'm just going to use an hour or a week or a month for the capture phase, and then I'm going to move on.
I don't particularly, because I think that, again, it goes back to this concept that we will never stop having ideas. But what I find really useful about whatever you want to use is I can have a folder that says vision or capture or whatever, and I can just keep adding in separate ideas into it. But then when I move on to, okay, I kind of want to know what all of this is, which is the connect phase, is I can run that connection both in my own mind of going, that's making me think about this.
Yes.
And then I will ask the AI to sort of say, what connections can you think? But then I will also say to the AI, what isn't really jiving for you?
Because what doesn't fit?
It's a large language model. It looks for patterns. That's its nature, okay, is looking for patterns. And that's what ADHD minds also do, is look for patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So I can iterate those folders or whatever that represent those stages in whatever way I want to. And then I can say, right, that idea, tell me what you think is the strongest and why. Tell me what you think is the weakest and why. And so it's giving me this back so that I'm now making mental connections as well.
Yes.
And then I will say, and this I think is one of the most important parts of the process, is structure.
Yeah.
I cannot structure things easily. Someone asks me to write a one-page, you know, summary of something. Oh, it's the hardest thing in the world.
Being concise or creating a structure?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. Being concise, but I could put that much more in. But I could put that much more in. And you're writing like you're verbalizing. And so that was the thing that I found that AI really helped me with in this process, is around you're structuring the potential areas within those ideas that you've put in, that you've asked for connections over. And then you say, okay, right, let's theme these things. Theme this against my vision for where I want to be in 3 months. What are the key things that you're seeing? Send this back to me. I'm looking at this going, right. And what does that mean in terms of I need to then iterate this through conversations with other people, the outside environment. Always make sure you have human beings as part of your process. AI will never do it all. You know, it's fallible, just like all human beings. Mm. And you do not get the same creative response from AI that you do from a human being. So I'm a big advocate that this is not something that replaces going and talk to other people.
It amplifies. It doesn't replace your creativity or even your creative process. I almost think as you're walking us through this, it's like in a way we're sort of outsourcing our executive functioning, but we have executive functions. They're just not robust. So you're not saying, okay, you handle this. You're collaborating with the AI and you are using the AI to amplify your original observations and ideas.
And to organize. So, you know, being a completer finisher is so hard. So for me, you know, condensing ideas into something that's digestible by other human beings, that's the thing.
Can you tell more about that? Because I think that's something that we're not always so comfortable articulating. But when you have what I call big ideas in a busy brain, we're oftentimes talking over, around, and past people. Even the ones we're trying to connect with, collaborate with, and contribute to. And you deal with that too. How do you use this process to not do that?
So it starts with that empathy question again. And when it comes to the sort of structuring phase, I start thinking about, right, who is my audience for this? And I'll often think about specific people I know who represent certain archetypes. Mm-hmm. So I will think about my husband, who it can be very detail-oriented on certain things, but is not interested in numbers at all, but thinks about the messaging to other people. His background was in PR. Mm. I think about my business partner, who is a self-identified pedant, and he will go through and pick up on all the places where I haven't included the right comma and the right full stop. But he also sees the big picture, but he's looking at this going, right, if this is going in front of our bank manager, Sarah, these are the things they're going to be looking for. So I'll think about, right, how do I get this through what Frank needs to see, what Mark needs to see, what Jane, my managing director, needs to see, because that's where they come from, where their interests lie. So I almost create these little archetypes of people and how they represent the different phases of getting an idea into fruition, so to speak. Mm. So once we get past the creative process of creating something, you know, which ends up at the end of the sort of reflection process, and we're into, okay, it's now here, we need to implement it. What are going to be all the barriers to actually getting this implemented? And I find thinking about creating audiences in my own mind and thinking about, with empathy, what is it and where is their mind going to be when I'm asking them to read this or to listen to me? And oftentimes there's children running around in the background. There's dinner to be made. There's other meetings that they're trying to get to. They're on a train. How can I do this in a way that they are going to go, Sarah, this is awesome? Because I know their definition of awesome is going to be different from each other. So I do that. And then I tell the AI, right, we're going to be writing this structure for these three different people. I want you to finesse the structure of this document, and I do decide what that product looks like, whether it's an email, whether it's a document, whether it's a presentation, a video, whatever. I have it clear in my mind about what are the kinds of things that are going to get each one of those people. Ah, okay. Yes, that's great. And the reality is that there's overlap between all of them, whether they're big picture people or, you know, detail people, they're still human beings. They respond to a story. They're just going to have different questions at the end of the story. And so I tell my AI, right, this is the kind of thing that these people ask me questions over whenever we talk to them. And so we start preparing that in advance, which then allows me to almost have these different versions of my idea prototype and that I can send to people. And then as they send me questions back, I'm able to tell the AI, well, these are the questions that we got back on this. What do we think to this? And I always tell the AI, because the AI is built to be positive and support the confirmation bias in our brain. So I always say, right, you have to challenge this. This needs to be more critical. What would somebody who is not interested in this be saying? And so I also bring that into the iterate and express sort of phase of the process, where we have create these sort of variable versions, but they are only two or three variable versions aimed at different audiences that then actually we start to overlap and build out in the reflection phase. And it becomes like a learning loop of, right, this is how this responds to this kind of person who wants to know about the costs and the money about this. They want to know about the time scale. They want to know about the resources, because what they're worried about in their job and in their life is, I don't have enough time. I don't have time to deal with this. I don't have enough time to deal with everything else that you're going to throw at me, Sarah. You know, how do we deal with that? And so I'm able to bring all of those things into that sort of reflection phase that says, and this is how we're going to minimize the time. This is how we're going to think about resource. And ultimately, at the end of the process of capture, connect, structure, iterate, express, and then reflect, what I've created is what I call the 3D Jenga model. And so everyone knows what a Jenga tower looks like and how they're built with interconnecting but crisscrossing bricks. And when you crisscross bricks in the same way that if you were building a cathedral or a new house, the more you do that, the more structural integrity you bring to the concept. So if each one of those bricks represents the viewpoint that I have gotten different people and my AI to explore, and they're viewpoints that intersect with each other rather than overlap each other, my concept builds in strength, builds in robustness, that even if one, two, three, or four bricks or bars come out of it, it still stays standing. And that's the process that's allowed me to have five businesses, because I started out with a vision of where I wanted to be. And that is in a year's time, 5 years time, all the way through to, I've actually said, where do I want to be when I'm 70? Where do I want to be when I'm dead? I've actually asked myself that question. What do I want? And I'm a big believer that we're all made of energy, and when we die, we go back to the universe, and the universe gets that energy. Gets that energy. And I think about how all of that needs to go somewhere. All of that energy that is currently in me is going to go somewhere. But I want to go on the journey with it. So I create the 3D Jenga model, and my businesses are all interrelated with each other. So that, yes, I have a podcast, History for Fuck's Sake. I apologize for swearing.
Oh, never apologize for swearing on my podcast. I'm surprised I haven't done any yet.
We're doing really well. History FFS. And I had somebody say to me, Sarah, this is just a passion project that you're spending loads of time and energy and money on. And I said, but it's not a passion project. Because my vision and understanding what I need to be like and to have in my life to have joy, to have satisfaction, that's all part of that vision of like, I don't know if this actually Elvis did say this, but I always like to attribute it to Elvis. Having someone to love, something to do, something to look forward to, those are three really good things to sort of have in your quiver, so to speak. And whenever I'm designing or thinking about all these new ideas, It's like, how can my podcast, for example, bring me joy? Well, it brings me joy because I get to talk to all these amazing people about untold history and history of film, literature, how we look at history through film, literature, etc. But it also connects back to my consultancy businesses, which one is all about management consultancy for arts, heritage, culture, creative industries, where you need to know your arts, heritage, culture, history, okay? Or they kind of look at you and go, you have no concept of what it's like to work in this sector, and they blow you out the door. So by doing my podcast, I get joy. I also get to keep up with my history, what's going on, that kind of thing. It also helps in terms of marketing, social media. It helps my other business, which is about creating and producing experiences in real life or in digital channels or in television and media. It's about storytelling, so on and so forth. That is how I've created, through this structure, the 3D Jenga model, that even when we get the knocks, and we are going to get the knocks, it's not taking me off my vision. And by doing it like this, I found in my wallet probably 2 years ago, an old wallet back in the cupboard, like you don't even want to see what my room with all my clothes and stuff looks like, because it's just a bomb site. But I found this wallet, and in it, I'd written it in 2008 when I turned 30. Wow. These are the things I wanted to achieve by the time I was 40.
Oh, wow.
And I had about 20 things on the list, and I achieved 17 of them. And I was like, wow, that's awesome.
That, Sarah, that's exceptional, not just for a human being, but to be a person with ADHD, because as you have said, we're really good at starting, but not so consistent about finishing. And so because you understand this about yourself, and because you have this everything is connected belief system, you want to finish what you start. And you want to enjoy the entire process, not just the starting. Because a lot of us, I think it's one of the reasons why so many people with ADHD are serial entrepreneurs, because we're really good at starting and we really suck at finishing. So we just abandon ship, let someone else run it and move on to the next thing. So we never really learn. And I understand we have issues with distractibility. We have issues with shiny object syndrome. We have issues with consistency. We have issues with not being able to make and distribute enough of our own dopamine. So we're always jonesing for the next place we can find it. But this process of capture, connect, structure, iterate, express, reflect, it's such a way you can keep looping back around and going deeper into whatever you're doing, which means you're renewing your energy, you're renewing your interest, you're renewing your excitement, you're renewing your creative problem solving, you're creating more connections, you're creating more dots, and you have the 3D model that allows you to see the interrelatedness of all the different things you're doing. Because normally, I'll tell you, normally, before I met you, when someone would tell me I have five businesses, they would get a little, either a side eye or a stink eye, because in most cases, there's one that's fairly well developed, a couple that are languishing, and two that are still in their head. And you actually have five functional businesses because of your ability to create the scaffolding that holds them together, so they're not all competing with each other for your limited executive functioning and bandwidth. What I would love to know is one part of the process more stimulating, more exciting, more appealing, kind of like your happy place, and you're willing to do the others? Or do you actually find dopamine, satisfaction, meaning, purpose in all aspects of it?
I think I find it in all aspects of it. And I think the reason why is because when I'm coming up with new ideas, I'm challenging myself to say, okay, well, I could have a million ideas, but I'm sort of saying, how does this fit within the wider vision and the wider Jenga model? And actually the things that I really enjoy doing. So I think we have to lean into our passions as well. Like, I'm not the kind of person that, as a serial entrepreneur, goes from running a management consultancy business for arts, culture, heritage, and then says, I want to start a gardening business.
Yeah.
All right. Because it's so different from what I find I'm passionate about. So it's like, I'm tapping into the things I get hyper-focused over as well. And I think that there is a, that's something I would encourage other people with ADHD to do, is recognize where your hyper-focus is, because that's your passion. Or it's if it's not a passion and you're hyper-focusing on it because it terrifies you, then you can turn that into a passion with skill building, et cetera, as well. And so I have that sort of wider net. So it's almost like a series of interconnecting nets, you know, big nets, medium nets, little nets, that allows me to just keep dumping ideas in and going, right, how does it fit within the sort of all the wider nets? And when I'm tired of that subject and going to move on, like is we are naturally, and it may just, I'm not physically tired, but I'm like, I'm bored of this now. I'm going to go look at something else. I need to get dopamine from somewhere else. I have got a variety of ideas already half formed, like half in the oven. It's like a par baked loaf of bread. Okay. I could take that par baked loaf of bread out of the freezer and stick that in the oven, because that's going to give me another dopamine lift. And that's where the Capture Connect is really great. And then sort of trying to finish that, when I Capture Connect with that structure, I can go back to those structures and say, okay, I want another structure about this. And it gets me back into it. So in terms of it, the stages having bringing me more joy, I don't think there's anyone that I love more than the other. I'd say the ones that are the most anxiety producing are the ones where you're talking to other people about it.
Yes.
But what I have certainly found is that because the AI has helped me develop the structures, the things that I found the most difficult to do.
Yes.
It didn't need to help me do a lot of the capture and connect other than to keep me a bit organized, but it really did need to help me create the structures and the sort of, right, and how do we tweak this for these individual people? Once that sort of slotted in, a lot of my anxiety around the iterate and express stage actually went away. I'm a lot more confident because it's filling a gap that I know is not something I'm strong in, but I'm giving it all the things that it's not going to do anything with. And then other people are giving us both that sort of feedback that neither I'm able to see, nor perhaps the bots can see. And then that becomes, right, let's think about the feedback loop on it. And that's how I stop myself from just completely going off in a wild different direction and trying to think about businesses and whatnot that are not connected to my 3D Jenga model, because I'm asking it, here's my connections that already exist. How does it connect? How does it not connect?
Yes.
If this is random, is it worth expanding the wider net? Or do we need to say, you know what, this is a great idea, give it to somebody else? And so whether they love it or hate it, I can't tell sometimes. I will often talk to other people and say, hey, do you know that, like, you love doing gardening? Have you ever thought about doing this for yourself? Especially when they're going, oh my God, my life, I'm so bored at work, I don't want to do this.
I have an extra idea I'm not choosing.
Here, you can have it. Exactly. Here's my idea. You know, here's how you create a new gardening business. And actually, again, this goes back to the empathize part. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of my friends have said that they love about me, is that when they're having a problem with work or whatever, I will always come to them not just with a listening hat on. And it's not about solving problems. It's just like, okay, what about some ideas, you know? And then they'll go, thank you, that's enough, Sarah. And I'll be like, they're all yours. So
being generous with your idea, you're reminding me of one of my ideas for people with extra ideas, is wouldn't it be cool if there was like a swap meet for yeah. ideas where I have so many ideas that I'm not using. It's kind of like, you know, when you donate extra clothes or furniture yeah. that you're not using, wouldn't it be great if those of us who have an abundance of ideas could have a place to just go park them, and people who love developing things, but they're not as good at the ideation part, they can just go pick it up and run with it. But you're also reminding me of two other things, and I want to make sure we get a chance to say this before we wrap. You are demonstrating two of the things that I consider my core concepts in working with entrepreneurs with ADHD. One is that you are demonstrating a level of radical self-acceptance. That is, this is how I operate. These are my strengths. These are my struggles. And I'm going to really lean into the things that naturally fascinate me, that I'm really good at, that I can hyper-focus on like nobody's business. And then I'm going to not focus on getting better at these things. I'm going to use tools, and I'm going to provide supports to myself in the form of other people so that I can just really live in my zone of genius and just continue to develop that more and more. And I think that really does come from a place of radical self-acceptance, because the rest of us are trying to fix what we think is broken. It does not work. And the other thing is boundaries. Like, you have made peace with the fact that the more good ideas you have, the more often you need to say no. And you've accepted that. And so you're like, nope, this is my framework. This is my Jenga model. These are my hyperfixations. This is my flavor of polymathery. And if it doesn't fit with that and doesn't expand on that, it's no. And I'm not going to indulge it. I'm not going to entertain it. I'm not going to waste two brain cells thinking, yeah, but maybe how can I make it fit? You're like, fuck no. And that is an absolute necessity if we want to get to the end of this life without regret when you have this much creativity. So if your mind is overflowing with ideas and you constantly battle with finishing what you start, try mapping your project with Sarah's process. And if you have crafted your own process for wrangling your creative ADHD brain, I want to hear from you. You can leave a comment for this episode on Spotify, DM me on LinkedIn, or use the SpeakPipe widget on my website to leave a voice note. There are links to each option in the show notes. And until next time, keep catching those butterflies.